You are Locked On Grizzlies, your daily Memphis Grizzlies podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome into the Locked On Grizzlies podcast. I'm your host, Mark King. This Friday edition of the podcast, Joe Maldex from site manager of Grizzly Bear Blues is joining me tonight. But as we record on Thursday night for this Friday episode, but if you have not already downloaded the Himalaya app, please go do so. It's a great app. It's super easy to use. You can subscribe to our podcast straight through that app. If you're not already subscribed, please do so in iTunes, Spotify, wherever you get your podcast from. If you have a moment, please go rate and review the podcast in iTunes. It's super helpful for us. But let's not wait and wait anymore. Joe Maldex, site manager of Grizzly Bear Blues. What's going on, man?
Not too much. It's been a busy week. For everybody who checks out our podcast over at grizzlybearblues.com, GBB Live, I recorded three podcasts, wrote a 3,500-word opus to the Grizzlies head coaching search. It must be spring break. And, you know, I like to dive into the blog my week that I have without the day job. So it's been a good week, and I've enjoyed listening to your show. You had a great conversation with Matt Hardlicka earlier this week, and I liked listening to that. So it's a good opportunity to catch up on some stuff. And it was a good week to get caught up because of all the change.
Yeah, it's been a busy week for you. You've been dropping, seems like, podcasts every day, writing. You've been on Gary Parish. It's been a week full of Joe Maldex, and I don't think there's probably enough of it, man. But you mentioned Matt and I had a conversation yesterday, and, you know, Matt kind of talked me off the ledge. I know that you and I spoke, you know, I kind of chat all the time, actually, but we were chatting in our group message when this actually happened. I think I'm probably, and I don't want to make this very clear. I don't want to be cynical. Like, that's not how I want to come across. I want to be positive. Like, I want this team to be good. I want these people to succeed. But as you mentioned, they made front office moves or changes or rearranged. First off, I just want to, what do you think about the changes Cho and Glenn from Toronto and the Hornets, respectively? I guess Glenn's with the Canadian Association for Canada, right, for basketball right now. But thoughts on these moves and any reservations you might have, good or bad? Just give me your take.
Well, I think when it comes to Cho, and I believe it's Grunwald is the last name, when it comes to those two, any reservations that you have come from, in my opinion, the concerns that have developed over the years with the front office and the lack of trust you have in how they do things over at FedEx Forum. Because to me, you look at their experience, and if you're developing a brain trust kind of structure like Robert Parr clearly values, the owner of the Grizzlies, controlling owner at least, if you see the way that he's trying to build this thing, and you read Peter Epstein of The Athletic, as I know you do, and you know, all the different articles and content that have come out about these guys trying to piece together what this is going to look like. To me, if you trust them and take them at their word, that they're underneath Kleiman, and obviously Kleiman is a separate issue for many folks, but if you believe that they're not going to be the final decision maker, and obviously even Kleiman's not that, it's Para, but if in terms of the basketball side of things, if it's Kleiman and then everybody else, I don't know why you would be down on bringing in two guys with so much front office experience who have taken teams to the playoffs before. The last time the Knicks were in the playoffs, I believe it was Grunwald, and again, forgive me if I'm mispronouncing his name. I think that's it. But yeah, it was the gentleman running Canada basketball, Grunwald, who was in charge. You know, Cho, who obviously made some mistakes, I think most folks would point to the Batum contract and only say that's a little bit better than the Chandler Parsons deal. And that's just one example. You have Marvin Williams, you have Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, lots of different guys that maybe got signed for a little bit more than they should have. But at the same time, you know, you have to have context. Batum was signed and viewed as a pretty important piece of the Portland Trailblazers that was worthy of that deal just for the sake of understanding that Charlotte was, I think, a 48-win team or something like that. They were a contender, they thought, and they were trying to go all in, and they swung and missed. So Batum at least didn't have the health concerns that Chandler Parsons did. So I am willing, because they're not making the final decision, if Chu was brought in to be what Kleiman is,
I would have more of an issue with it. But because they're there to kind of help him wade through the waters of NBA front offices, deal with the bureaucratic red tape, negotiations with agents, things that Kleiman can't possibly be experienced in because, for God's sake, he's 2 years younger than me, and I'm still relatively young at 32, at least I like to think I'm young. But as a 30-year-old guy running an NBA front office, he can't possibly have the answers to those things because he hasn't been on the earth long enough to have the answers to lots of things. So I think that in terms of experience, it's good to have those two guys on board. You needed pieces to help with that side of it. And it's not like you're going to be able to pick off, you know, the Danny Ainges of the world to come do that for Kleiman in Memphis. You kind of do the best you can with what you got. And at least you have somebody in Cho, especially, who has that connection with Kleiman, who wants to see him succeed. And then beyond that, obviously hopes to be running his own NBA team again someday. So I am not as down on it as I've seen others be. I kind of understand anything that is greeted with skepticism with regard to this front office. And I'm writing about that for an article for Friday over at GrizzlyBearBlues.com. And Kleiman, to his credit, has said as much. You know, they have to earn the trust of people when it comes to the moves they're going to make. And until they have the opportunity to do that, whether it's the draft, whether it's free agency, all the things coming up in the months and years ahead, even if they're really going to take a long-term view of this thing, that's where they'll do it. But for now, everything they do is going to be scrutinized because it falls into a concerning pattern, depending on your perspective.
Yeah. I mean, Matt, he made me feel a little bit better last night. He kind of, cause you know, I was one of those people. I see past track records and I go, oh, that doesn't really add up for me. And again, I'm just being a realist of what I see and I can only go off what we know. He made a little better, you know, listen to Harrington on Jeff Calkins show on 99 today. He kind of explained it like you did as well. Cho's not being brought in to make the final decision. He's helping with the analytics, which is apparently what he's good at, and maybe not so good at making the contract decisions. I don't know.
Right.
So yeah, I mean, along those lines, maybe it's different. Maybe it's better. They still have less things left to prove. Obviously, like you said, Kleiman has absolutely no experience. I mean, he has zero experience. He doesn't even know what he doesn't know. Do you think that is Para just being comfortable with these guys with Kleiman? I mean, and Grunwald and Cho were advising the Grizzlies last year as well. Is that just these guys, Kleiman and Para, just being comfortable with the people they already know?
I don't think so. I made this comparison on Twitter. I know you can relate to this given your line of work as well. I run SB Nation's Grizzly Bear Blues, and people like to view me as a media member, and I appreciate that. And you know, I kind of built up myself over the years to being in some kind of in-between realm of fan and media member. I think that's fair to say of what we do at GBB. We're not obviously full-blown media, but I wouldn't disrespect us saying that we're just fans. I think that we're something somewhere in the middle that only, you know, the 21st century could create and technology and all that stuff. But I'm a part-time person, right? I'm one of the folks that's fortunate enough to be paid for my hobby. You know, lots of people pay for their hobbies. I get paid for mine. But it's a part-time gig. You know, I do not make anywhere near enough to sustain my family. I don't get benefits. Only with a full-time gig would I get those things, plus the attention that maybe a full-time media member, a Jeff Calkins, a Chris Harrington, you know, those are two of the very best in Memphis and arguably in the country, and they deserve everything they get in terms of accolades and all that stuff. I'm not them, but I'm also not a full-time person, if that makes sense. So to me, if you're going to take Grunwald, if you're going to take Cho and say that they were already part of an organization when they were part-time, especially Cho, it sounds he's moving to Memphis. He's uprooting whatever life he had and coming to the city. That is different. I just don't see how you can look at that and say, oh, it's the same old, same old. To me, it's not. It's not. He's going from partly in to all in. And I think that there's a pretty big difference there, at least to me. It makes him more invested in what they're trying to do. And Kleiman is the exact opposite of what Chris Wallace was. Chris Wallace was the NBA lifer. I think Chris Vernon, who I had on the podcast this week, you know, Vernon in the past had called him a cockroach. Like, the NBA could be nuclear bombed, and Chris Wallace would still be alive working in a front office somewhere. And I think that that's, you know, an apt comparison. And Kleiman is a 30-year-old who clearly works hard, who both Para and Jason Wexler see talent in. And in the absence of somebody like Shane Battier or some other rising former player or general coach type of star that you could bring into this front office, why not bet on talent? If you think that he's talented, if you think he's going to work hard, if you think that he is committed to growing into the job, why not make that investment, especially if this is going to be a long-term kind of build where your key new franchise cornerstone is 19 years old, won't be even entering his prime until the next 4 or 5 years. Why not take a chance on a guy that could be a Theo Epstein, that could be one of these young executives who kind of rises up? You know, Daryl Morey would be another example, a little bit older there, but just a thinker, a guy who is more embracing of what the modern game is, and he's right in under your roof. Now, in and again, going back to what we talked about earlier in the point of my article that's going live on Friday, this is all hypothetical, right? And if you're going off of the history of the Memphis Grizzlies, you have reason to be skeptical that not only is this more of the same, but it's not going to work because the structure hasn't worked in the past. And Para has never had somebody who could effectively sell someone on the vision, and it's his vision, and consistently do it within the realm of what Para wanted. You know, Jason Levien, you can maybe argue, was close to that, but obviously they had a disconnect along the way, and that partnership ended just a year or two into it. I think Jason Wexler is somebody who has earned the trust of Robert Para, who clearly has positioned himself to be, you know, working his way up as well into this new role as Grizzlies president. He's a Memphian. He believes in Memphis and what it can be as an NBA market. He knows how to sell it. And if he can apply that to the basketball side of things and help sell the vision that this brain trust, in air quotes, brain trust can come up with, I think that it's worth giving them a chance to get to that point. I see the worth in investing in potential. It doesn't mean that it necessarily comes to fruition right away, but Memphis isn't necessarily in the boat where they're trying to win now. And I think, if anything, some of these changes that they've made have made it clear that they're accepting that more than they ever have before. There's no more reaction, as Wexler put it. It's being proactive. You're not reacting to the world around you. You're trying to prepare for what's to come. And that's a shift in philosophy. And I think that's a positive thing for the Grizzlies.
Yeah, I see all that. And I love the fact that they went young. I was a proponent of that before Chris Wallace was fired months ago. I think that's a great idea. Does it concern you, though, that they did the same thing that they did last year with the coaching search? They didn't have a search. They just named basically an assistant GM and gave him the job, whatever, you know, just it's like having an interim coach who's never really had a head coaching job before. There was no coach. There was no search firm. There was now, it seems like they've been probably putting this together for a little longer than the week that we saw it come together.
Right.
But there was really no interviews being held outside from the, you know, it was just, okay, it's Zach's job now. Let's see what you can do. He might be talented. Yes, he might be smart. But does it concern you that, and if he was the best candidate, you could still give him the job. But does it concern you they didn't have interviews, whether the people, they didn't bring other outside people in just to talk to them and say, hey, this guy might be good, but we might find someone better?
I think that would have been ideal. I think that's a fair critique to make. And you look at the organization, and if you apply my philosophy, and others have said this too, it's not unique to me, the concept that there's only 30 NBA head coaching jobs and there's going to be value regardless of where the job is, there's also only 30 head executive jobs. You know, again, the brain trust model is gaining traction in 2019 in the NBA. But as Wexler said on the Vernon podcast or show, if there was an executive of the year award to be won for a Memphis executive, Kleiman would be the representative. It'd be him. He'd be the guy acknowledged as the head basketball honcho, whatever the hell title they want to give him. I guess for me, you saw what he was capable of with the Gasol trade. It's been widely accepted now that he was pretty much running the point on that. Wallace, by that stage, had been taken out of the picture. Vernon on our podcast, you would be live this past week, kind of, and you've heard it from Harrington and others, the bungled Brooks trade with the Suns and the Wizards, that was kind of the end, the beginning of the end for Wallace. That miscommunication, the massive embarrassment that came from that just can't happen. And the transition kind of started around that time. Multiple folks have said, like I said, most people acknowledge that the Gasol trade was climbing. The Bradley trade had to happen before the Gasol trade. And the merits of those deals, I think you can continue to debate, and we won't really know the answers ever, because we don't know what the actual final packages were for Mark and for Jermichael and Garrett Temple. But I think that you can look at DeLon Wright, even though he's 27 years old, and say that's a guy that can help you the next few years. Jonas Valanciunas, another example of that. And they're not old like Mark. And again, 33 or 34, calling that old is fun, but when I'm only a year or two away from that myself. But in terms of the NBA, it is older. And now you have at least guys that are 6 years behind that. So you, in theory, have contributors for the next 4 or 5 years, depending on contracts and value that you put on those two players. And you go beyond that and you look at what you already have in-house. I don't know. I guess for me, front office-wise, it doesn't bother me as much, because you've seen him in action. It's different from being a coach, because you're not necessarily finishing out the job of another coach. When J.B. Bickerstaff replaced David Fizdale, he was pretty much finishing out the season of another coach, and he didn't have the capacity to change his personnel, if that makes sense. He kind of had the hand that he was dealt, and he had to play it out. I think that Bickerstaff was in a tougher spot. Here, when Kleiman was given the reins kind of midway through the year, he was able to show what he could be capable of doing. It's not like Bickerstaff was able to change scheme, if that makes sense. When you're that deep into the season, even though it was only December, I think, when Fizdale was fired, it doesn't make sense to completely overhaul everything you do. You might as well just ride it out and do the best you can. And then it eventually became a tank because of the Conley injury and all of those things that were happening. To me, it's apples and oranges, because when Kleiman took the helm or the reins, whatever metaphor you want to use, he was able to make changes to the roster. He was able to kind of show how he would handle a trade negotiation, how he would deal with players and adjustments to rosters, and on the go, making a new type of fit for your team. So I think they're different because Kleiman had more capacity to demonstrate what he could do than Bickerstaff did in a similar situation.
I guess that's probably where we diverge on this, because I guess we're kind of regarded that Kleiman had his hands on the trade deadline deals. And that's kind of where we probably see things differently. I see it as they really didn't do a good job on that Marc Gasol trade, waiting to the last minute to do the deal. They should have done the deal a week earlier or as soon as they could, so that they could do different deals with Jermichael Green and Garrett Temple, instead of having to give them away to get back under luxury tax, because that's essentially what they did, is because they overspent with bringing in money from Toronto. And again, I like Jonas Valanciunas, I like DeLon Wright, but overspending and then having to get back under luxury tax by giving away your two best assets you had besides Marc Gasol. And I guess that's probably how, and I see now where we probably, you know, diverge on the opinions of the hiring, because you view that as a win and a good deal because of the things they got for Marc Gasol. I kind of view it in a different situation of the timing of the deal. And so, yeah, that makes much more sense now the way kind of we think. And again, this is all pure speculation. We have no idea what's going to happen.
Sure.
Everybody deserves a fair chance, and we'll give him that. We're just, obviously, we have to talk about the things that we have in front of us. Let's take a quick break. We're going to be back with Joe Monick, site manager of Grizzly Bear Blues, in just a minute and continue this conversation with him. Wyze is the indoor camera that does it all. Wyze is packed with premium features that allows you to see everything from anywhere for only $20. It's 1080 full HD. The images are so clear you won't miss a thing. It's got night vision and two-way audio. Wyze has one mission, is to bring amazing smart home products and make it accessible to every single person. If you're on vacation and want to check on your house, All you have to do is log into their app and see the live stream from anywhere in the world. If you're on vacation, if you want to make sure your dogs are okay, if you want to make sure that your plants have been watered, literally you can watch anything you want to watch from anywhere in the world with the WiseCam at just $20 a camera. It is super, super affordable. And even bigger bonus, they have a free 14-day rolling cloud storage and no subscriptions. I know that every single time you get something, there's always that hidden thing as you have to subscribe. Well, with WiseCam, there is no subscriptions at all. And for just $10 or more, WiseCam Pan gives you 360 degrees of coverage in under 3 seconds. Life moves fast. Your camera should too. You can also track action. WiseCam Pan automatically detects, tags, and tracks motion within its field of view. You want to watch your pets when you're on vacation? It's literally never been easier, as the WiseCam Pan will keep up with the motion as it crosses the field of view. Keeping up with life in real time has never been so easy. It even works with Alexa. It also works on your smartphone from literally anywhere in the world. Go to wise.com/locked. That's wise.com, WYZE.com/locked. You'll get the lowest price available. Welcome back to the show. Site manager of Grizzly Bear Blues, Joe Monix. He's dropping something. Should be out today because this podcast, we're recording this on Thursday, but this podcast is coming out Friday. So he should be dropping something over at grizzlybearblues.com. So make sure you go check that out. Also, check out the other podcasts on grizzlybearblues.com. You do a great job with yours, GBB. I guess it's not live anymore, but GBB Live. Your podcast is fantastic. So I guess it's GBB Middle Podcast of the Week. I don't know. Is it still live?
No, it's not. I guess I need to. It's kind of awkward. You're right. It's called GBB Live, but it's not live anymore. But I do think anybody that listens to the show, if you followed, because we've been doing it over 5 years now, it's just so much better. I mean, the quality is just so much better. It's really not even close or comparable. Shout out to Blog Talk Radio for being absolutely awful in terms of their quality. I'm very happy with Megaphone and the work that we're doing over there on GBB Live, and I appreciate the opportunity to shout it out.
It's good stuff. You had some really good people on, Chris Vernon this week.
I appreciate that.
It's fantastic.
Yeah, Chris Vernon, Peter Edmiston came on, and I'll be on Edmiston's show Friday morning, and then I'll be on with Hasseltine in the afternoon. So
I'm telling you, this is a week of Joe Monix. If you haven't already gotten your fill, make sure you get it in. I want to continue the conversation about this front office though. One thing that Woj mentioned in his tweet is that there would be more moves coming. What would you like to see them add after they've added the two guys they have, Cho and Grunwald? What else do you think they need?
A Shane Battier type. And what I mean by that is, because I don't think Battier is coming.
Wouldn't that be awesome, though, if he did?
It would be awesome. And to be honest with you, I would be fine with Battier doing what Kleiman is doing. But moved on from that. Tate Prince, it sounds like his role this past year was essentially just a liaison from front player and in between, and maybe he maintains that, maybe he adds some responsibility in this new front office. That remains to be seen. I would like to see another older former player come into the mix and be somebody who can speak from the perspective of actually playing the game, because I know Jeff Calkins has mentioned this, and I know you have as well. Lawyers in the room, and nothing against lawyers, they're more intelligent than me for choosing the profession that they did. But at the same time, basketball, IQ, inherent, when you go out and you play the game, and I can say this more about football than basketball, able to play it at the college level, there's something to be said for competing at that level or higher, obviously with the NBA, and knowing what it takes to be successful. So I would like to see somebody in that role, and again, Tayshaun hopefully can take on a little bit more responsibility here too. But I'd like to see another former NBA player, and I don't have any names in front of me. I'm sure there's some in NBA front offices around the NBA that you could maybe call and try to bring in, or maybe somebody who's newly retired that could just kind of be another set of eyes, can see how they see the game, can ask those types of questions that a Zachary Kleiman could never ask. You know what I mean? Like, you sit down with someone in an interview or in a trade negotiation or whatever it might be, trying to figure out what's going on with a player in terms of his development. If you're going to do this brain trust thing, I want as many different perspectives as possible. And I think that's a very fair criticism of what they're doing, is they all seem to be of the same ilk in terms of how they got into the front office business. Tayshaun Prince obviously being the main exception there. I would like to see, even if it's not a player, a guy who has been kind of like Cho, who's been in the NBA for a very long time, but who has some sort of experience beyond just working in a front office. Like I said, I would prefer a former player, because, like I said, if you're going to do the brain trust operation, you want different perspectives. You know, Tayshaun's already there, but it'd be good to have another guy who's kind of a mix of the two, who's been in the NBA front offices for a while, but also can still harken back to their own playing experiences and what it takes to be an actual winner in the NBA, because that mentality matters. You know, that's one of the reasons I hate Cam Reddish as a possible target for the Grizzlies in the draft if they don't convey the pick. I don't think he has the mentality. I don't think he's right up top. He has all the physical tools. Good Lord, if you watch him play at Duke, that's one of the things that's most frustrating about him, is he looks like he can do everything R.J. Barrett can do and maybe even more, but he just doesn't connect mentally for whatever reason. So that's one of the reasons I'm terrified of Cam Reddish. But that is something that a former player could watch the game, could watch tape, could sit in on an interview at a combine and look at you as soon as he leaves and say, avoid that kid at all costs. And that word would mean more from that former player than it would a 30-year-old lawyer who joined, you know, a front office in an internship. And I'm not knocking Kleiman, because if anything, it's impressive he's worked up as high as he has in the 6 or 7 years that he's been doing this. So it's a testament to his work ethic and his skill and his ability that he obviously has that Para and Wexler are willing to invest in him. But my point is, he needs to surround himself with as many different perspectives as he can to create as full of a picture as possible for him to be successful.
No, I think you're absolutely right. I mean, the more players you get in there, or player liaisons, I mean, because like you said, if the basketball thing doesn't work out, we're going to be a damn good law firm. I know that for sure. But you know, like getting guys in there that can talk to players on their level, that have gone through some of the things they have gone through, that type of, you know, a liaison, what I think would be ideal for these guys. And we'll see again that they're not done hiring people. They got a few more, or maybe a few more, maybe one, I don't know. Wojtasweet just said they're hiring more people. So, we'll see how it shakes out again. We'll see how this whole front office shakes out, because they have some decisions to make on Mike Conley very soon. They have a lot of decisions to make this summer right away on a lot of different players. So we'll know sooner rather than later on some of the decisions that they make, whether we like them, whether we think they're good or bad for the franchise. Last question, I'll get you out of here. When do you think that they'll make a coaching hire? Do you think they'll wait till after we know the draft order for the Grizzlies this year? Like if they were to somehow get up and get that number one pick, I think it changes the job drastically, having Zion Williamson here and Jaren Jackson Jr. Do you think they'll wait, or do you think you'll see something before them?
I don't think that they're purposely waiting till after the lottery. I think sure. That if they had an opportunity, like in my coaching series that I wrote, you know, if they love Sam Cassell or Dan Burke as much as I do, and they became realistically available, I think they jump on them and hire them regardless. I don't think they have anybody off the top of their head that they're, you know, madly in love with, to put in an awkward sort of way. So it might just take more time than it did last time, which it should. I'm hopeful that they interview a lot of different people, whether it's Becky Hammon or Brent Berry or Tony Bennett, you know, run the gamut of whoever could possibly sit in an office at FedEx Forum or any office in the country as they fly around to meet with people. Pick the brains of folks smarter than you. They should take right. Their time on this. I don't think that they necessarily are married to the idea that it has to be done before or after the lottery, but I do think that the patience that they take could lend them to, or lead them to, you know, lottery night comes and they still don't have a coach, and that'd be okay. And like you said, they all of a sudden win the lottery and Zion Williamson is coming to Memphis. You know, if you compare Zion Williamson and Jaren Jackson Jr. for the next decade together, I think that you just get attractive as an organization. Plus a Mike Conley trade, you know, you don't know what asset you get in that, you know, using the, you don't like Lonzo Ball as much, but if you use Lonzo Ball as an example of a young point guard you could bring in, I mean, Lonzo Ball and those two guys on the in the front court, you know, that's an attractive young core. All of a sudden, in a month and a half, you've got a young group that, in theory, you could build around. So I do think that it makes sense for them to wait. I don't think they're purposely doing it. I think they're going to be methodical in this process. They definitely want to have their front office structure figured out first before they do that process, because I do think if Pera is going to rebuild this thing, and again, I think skepticism is allowed in terms of what that actually looks like, but if he is truly going to redo and retool how they handle their basketball operations, you probably need to have that operation set before you be as a this head coaching hire, because Zachary Kleiman, his success is going to be largely determined by how he does this first 4 to 6 weeks in terms of establishing who the head coach is going to be, who's going to set the tone for the organization, the on-the-court product for the Grizzlies. It's going to be an extension, and I think that he's going to want all of the pieces that he's able to have in place to help him make such an important decision. So it could come after the lottery. I don't think it's done purposely waiting to see where they land. I think it's more about making sure that they have their ducks in a row as they embark on a pretty important decision-making process to start off the Kleiman-Wexler era.
Yeah, like I said, we're gonna know more sooner than we will later for sure about the decisions they make. They've got a lot of important decisions right in front of them, and so we'll see how it shakes out. And I hope for one that they – I want to come back in 2 months and be talking about how awesome this new front office is. I really do. I mean, it's much more fun doing these shows when we got something fun to talk about than it is to talk about how bad Chris Wallace is. So hopefully for us, it turns around. I think it would be an excellent, in retrospect, it'd be an excellent hire and something that we can look forward to for a long time. So we'll see how it goes. But Joe, I appreciate you joining me, man. And we'll try to do it again next week. I know the episodes have gone down to I'm doing like 1 to 2 a week now, not every day, but we'll still try to do it again next week.
Sounds good. Looking forward to it, buddy. I'll always do it for you. You know that.
Thanks again to Joe Mullenix, site manager of Grizzly Bear Blues, for joining me tonight. It was really a good episode, and I hope you guys enjoyed the conversation. He had some very interesting takes on Cho and Grunwald, and you know, he's obviously more excited about those moves than I was. I had some hesitation, but I think we got to the root of it is because of the way he viewed the Marc Gasol trade and the way the trade deadlines went down. And I think it's very interesting to know that those simple moves can affect those viewpoints later on in the season. Again, I viewed them, you guys know, as we talked about then, as we talked about it really as a few episodes ago, I viewed them much, much differently than Joe viewed him. And so that obviously skews your viewpoint and of the hire itself. So I thought that was interesting. Hopefully you guys like that conversation as well. Again, make sure you guys tune in to our shows next week. We're going to start doing some roundtables with a couple different media members. Hopefully we'll get through a lot of different takes over the next few weeks as we look forward to the draft. Once we know our draft position in the lottery, we'll probably still go out and start getting some opinions on some of the guys around that position that we could be looking at. I'll probably try to go out and source some guys that write for those particular teams and areas and try to really get to know some of these guys and who the Grizzlies should be taking. So it's going to be any fun next few months. So you guys stay tuned. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast in iTunes. Make sure if you have a minute, please go rate and review the show in iTunes. It really helps the show in the iTunes rankings. If you haven't already done so, please go download the new podcast app, Himalaya. You can subscribe to the podcast straight in that app. It's super easy, super intuitive. And those guys are a great sponsor of this show. Again, if you still don't know where to go after all that, just go to LockedOnGrizzlies.com.